This denial of self-examination of many of these police departments, which become fiefdoms of hostility towards citizens who pay taxes, and black citizens in particular, who continue to die and be traumatized in disproportionate fashion. But also the disparities in education. When kids are 7 and 8 and 9 years old being kicked out of school, when black kids and indigenous kids in particular are then put off the roll, you feed them into detention. Detention becomes a feeder into jail. Jail becomes a warehouse for prison. So when we talk about the school to prison pipeline, that's not just a cute phrase generated as a slogan among progressives. That is a description of the mechanics of horror and trauma upon vulnerable black life. And then dealing with
the COVID-19.
COVID-19 is extremely important. Got to deal with that as well.
Well, we want to thank you both for being with us. Michael Eric Dyson, political analyst, now a professor at Vanderbilt University. And Waleed Shaheed, spokesperson for Justice Democrats, will link to your piece in The Nation, A Blueprint for Social Movements During the Biden Presidency. To watch the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris today, visit democracynow.org. It begins around 11 o'clock Eastern time. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web, and K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio. It's 8 o'clock a.m.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you, Buffy St. Marie, for your beautiful spirit and your powerful words and music. Take heart and take care, truly, despite everything. It is beautiful. We've got to cling to that. keep to that. So, yeah, it's an incredibly auspicious moment, I must say, to be doing live talk radio right now, as the truly despicable Donald Trump has actually gotten on Air Force One and left Washington, D.C. for his fantasy land of Mar-a-Lago and whatever future awaits him. I won't speculate on that right now. If you want to talk about that, you can. But at the same time, the inauguration of Joe Biden is just beginning in Washington, D.C. I actually just watched on CNN briefly a half hour ago him and his wife and Kamala Harris and her husband walking up the steps of, I believe, the Capitol, which is particularly poignant given what happened there just a couple weeks ago. Yes, things are changing. Things are staying the same. I am flying solo today. 503-231-8187 is the number to call in and join the conversation. I wanted to just mention a few things right off the bat to let you know about an event, a rally to inaugurate justice, which if you listen to the old Mole show on Monday, they were talking about millions. I'm just going to read from their Facebook page. That's from today from 4 to 7 p.m. at Irving Park, right there on Fremont and Northeast, what is it, between 7th and 9th or 10th. So millions of working class and marginalized people voted to throw Trump out of office, but our organizing has to continue under the next administration. While 2020 was a year of devastation with so many people losing their jobs, their savings, and their lives, the Black Lives Matter uprisings inspired and moved millions into struggle against racism and police violence. Now we must build a mass movement to demand the changes we so desperately need, from racial to climate to economic justice. The Defend Democracy Coalition is holding a rally in March on Inauguration Day, that's today, at 4 p.m. at Irving Park to kick off this new period of struggle. We ask that all attendees wear a mask and practice social distancing. There will be American Sign Language interpretation provided by Fingers Crossed Interpreting. A car caravan is available for those with elevated risk levels for COVID-19. It will meet at 2 p.m. at PCC Cascade in the back parking lot off of Albina. And this is sponsored by... let's see. Join us to make these demands loud and clear. Black Lives Matter. Defund the police. Invest in communities. Pass the BREATHE Act. Jobs for all. We need a Green New Deal. Real COVID relief. Monthly payments. No evictions. Invest in public housing. Medicare for all now. Protect immigrants. Not one more deportation. Reunite families. Respect indigenous sovereignty. No corporate or governmental intrusion into indigenous lands without free, prior, and informed consent, and fund human needs, not endless welfare. And there's a long list of participating and sponsoring, endorsing organizations, too numerous to list right now. But if you are on Facebook, you can look it up, Rally to Inaugurate Justice, today at 4 p.m. I wanted to mention a couple of good pieces of good news that happened just yesterday. The Washington Department of Ecology denied a pivotal permit to a proposed methanol plant in Kalama, Washington, or Kalama, however you pronounce it. The Washington Department of Ecology defended its denial, and this is particularly interesting, by saying the refinery, which would convert fracked natural gas into methanol to be shipped to Asia, would emit vast amounts of greenhouse gases. If built, it would be among the top 10 greenhouse gas emitters in the state of Washington. In the denial, director of the Department of Ecology of Washington, Laura Watson, said, and an ecologist also addressed an argument used by supporters, that the refinery would do more good than harm as a pragmatic, used by supporters of the plant, that the refinery would do more good than harm as a pragmatic step away from coal until greener technologies become more available. A recent study also found the project could keep harsher greenhouse gas emitters from being built in places that have looser rules and regulations. So we've got the finally the greenhouse gas emission argument being used to possibly stop, certainly delay, certainly deal a major blow to a huge proposed fossil fuel facility in Washington. And we see it as a major precedent for further, as the new administration starts, that is actually openly dedicated to dealing, to the extent that we're able to deal with the climate crisis. Of course, regular listeners to the show know that I myself am rather skeptical of our chances of actually significantly stemming the tide of climate catastrophe, but you also know that I'm far from in favor of just sitting passively and watching it all go to hell. And so, hey, let's do what we can. And the Pacific Northwest has been on the cutting edge of stopping fossil fuel infrastructure projects. So, and another thing that happened was the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission upheld Oregon's denial of the Clean Water Act permit for the Jordan Cove liquefied natural gas plant. So two of the last remaining major export fossil fuel export facility proposals on the table after we've knocked down so many others. So I don't know, maybe 2021 is getting off to a good start after that. I don't know, was it the last gasp of Trumpism? Or who knows what's going to go on with that? There's a lot of different opinions about that. You might want to talk about that as well, as we are going to see the fallout from the insurrection at the Capitol play out, both with the rounding up of a lot of key players in the white supremacist and right-wing extremist movement, but we also see, them being emboldened by what a lot of them see as a success. So which way is that going to go? These are a couple things to talk about. I see the end of the Trump administration as a welcome sort of removal of a source of great frustration, pressure, terrible policies, and just a kind of a oppressive zeitgeist for all of us, in addition to being the source of actual death and long-term illness that could have been avoided to so many COVID patients because of his disastrous policies, as well as his disastrous immigration policies that, as we know, caused such devastation to immigrant families. And, just the continuation of a lot of the worst of what America has been about. Is the Biden administration going to be something of a turning point? I think all these things really depend on us, just as the victories we've had in the climate justice movement have been, basically driven from the grassroots, but also from key allies in positions of institutional power. I guess I might talk a little bit about the concept of dual power. I think that might become an increasingly important thing to talk about as we move ahead. I would like to mention the article that was talked about on Democracy Now. I had it written down. The article, I'll just go to the scroll to the top here. It was just on Democracy Now. I should remember Waleed Shaheed, a blueprint for social movements during the Biden presidency. Insurgent tactics and demands may irritate party leaders, but that friction still serves to move politics toward greater freedom and justice. Now, there's five key points. I just want to sort of skip to the fifth. He calls it the fight over public sentiment. Something I've talked about a few times on this program is, you know, my hope for the Biden presidency was, you know, obviously an end to the worst of what Trump brought in terms of totally dismantling federal regulatory agencies and moving away from some incremental movement towards climate justice and moving away from fossil fuels, complete being in bed with the fossil fuel industry, totally privileging the oligarchy to run wild, tax breaks for the rich, et cetera. Certainly that, but also challenging the Biden administration. And, you know, I think I even said that, you know, there's really never been a really growing social movements, much of growing social movements under Democratic administrations. Of course, that's not really true. Obviously, under the Roosevelt administration, a lot of what he did was pushed by massive, massive social uprising because of the Great Depression. And what Shahid points out in this article, I'll just read: during Obama's two terms, we witnessed the rise of movements like the Dreamers, Occupy Wall Street, the fight for $15 minimum wage, Black Lives Matter, and the movement against the Keystone and Dakota Access pipelines. Movements outside the halls of power shine a light on urgent issues, shape public opinion, and bend the impossible into the inevitable. Since Biden comes from a political tradition based more in triangulation than in any clearly held policy views, social movements will have to create the political space for the next Democratic administration to act at the scale of the crises that Americans are facing. Of course, not just Americans, the whole world. That's in the spirit of that. This rally to inaugurate justice is happening today at Irving Park. Well, those are a few things. I've got a bunch of other things I could read from and talk about. But it looks like we already have two people on stack. 503-231-8187 is the number to join this conversation. Let's go to Brian first of all. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Paul. Hi. Yeah, this is pretty auspicious time to have a show, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So much on my mind. My God, it's like my brain is going to explode. But I was listening to the radio yesterday on the other station, and listening to the Daily Show. It's New York Times, and they had a story about some of the people that believe in, interviewing some people that believe in what happened in D.C. They range from good to accepting it as a necessary evil. There were people on the right, and you know, listening to these people talk just gave me such a profound sense of hopelessness. You know, that we have such a substantial number of people that believe that our press and is completely lying to them, and they believe these right wing outlets. And it's just hearing the people speak and hearing all the hypocrisy and all the off the rails kind of thinking. One of the people interviewed was a college student studying graphic arts. So, you know, our stereotypes lead us in one direction as far as how this person might think, and then what she said, of course, was different. And it is just, I can't get my brain around, and this is a person who can think, can go to college, can apparently raise a family, can do all these things that we normally associate with people that have a reasonable amount of intelligence, and yet...
So how can we bring this into more of what do we do going forward conversation?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, you watch the film of what happened in the House, for example, on the 6th, and you see these people that are just like orcs, you know, remember Tolkien's orcs? These people are just like, wow. But you hear other people, Yeah, and you know, you can kind of understand these people are operating at a very intellectually low level. But then you hear people that support what they did, or at least see it as a reasonable or something necessary, and it's like, wow, these sound like normal people. What do we do? But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. And then also looking at the crowds that were in, you know, D.C., I saw people of color in the crowd, and like the guy, what is it, Proud Boys guy, Enrique, is that named Ferraro? He's Hispanic, and uh-huh. and that takes me to another level of despair. It's like, wow, you know.
Well, so I'm not feeling despair myself.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was hoping to take this in a direction, sort of away from despair. So I'm not sure where you're going.
Well, what I'm going is, in light of those things that I have seen, and I think there's a lot of people out here that we want to feel real good about Biden and Harris, and I did as much work as I could to call Georgia and do those things to make that happen, yet fully knowing that, you know, he wasn't my first choice, and she wasn't either. You know, with people like me, and if we just have a feel-good show, I think maybe we'll lose some people. Like, because we're really concerned with going forward. How do we do it? We can't just throw these people away that feel the way they do. You know.
Well, we don't have any. We don't have much power to either throw away or not throw away. I mean, they exist.
What
I would say to you is that what I listen to, you know, AM talk radio, like at night especially, and what I hear is them. A lot of those people, I hear sort of a little bit of a division. I hear some people sort of being forced to accept reality and sort of trying to steer their listeners as gently as they can away from the most sort of rabbit hole conspiratorial ideas. And then some people just totally doubling, tripling, quadrupling down and sort of fomenting that kind of, you know, because that's, people get their ideas from somewhere. So the problem is the, you know, both the deep sort of cultural background of white supremacy and, you know, colonialism and, you know, institutional racism and oligarchy and the idea of, like, you know, prosperity gospel, you know, that you can sort of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, the myths of capitalism that inculcate this society that are being perpetuated by, you know, these in social media, right-wing radio, et cetera, Fox News, whatever, which are going to continue to exist. So how do we amplify our messages in the best way possible? How do we bring people in and sort of draw people away from that? And, you know, there's the direct, you know, there's a lot of controversy over Twitter's decision to drop Trump. You know, Glenn Greenwald, for example, has been on Fox News going against that decision. You know, there's, you know, civil liberties issues, et cetera. But, you know, what are the tools that we have at our disposal? And I think the big one that we have is to, you know, is to amplify our own voices by, you know, maybe going to the rally to inaugurate justice, maybe to do more organizing, and to join in actual movements, whether it's on the streets or whether it's supporting progressive legislators. I don't know. That's all I can think of.
Well, you know, I think most of our the weapons, sorry for that analogy, but the weapons that we have are you know, using our brains to proceed forward. But of course, if you're up against people that believe in QAnon, I mean, how do you use common sense or logic?
We got to move on to another caller.
Can I just say one other thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, one other thing is, I just had an experience with my family in dealing with people that we thought were on our side as far as the way they thought about the world and politics and progressing forward, where they behaved just horribly. So one thing I want to say is that as we move forward, people that believe in progressive values and doing the right thing, please check in with yourselves about not becoming so enamored of your idea of a progressive, good, ethical person that your behavior starts veering from that. As we proceed, we're going to have to really check in with ourselves that we are really doing actually the things that we should be and not diverting from our values. I just wanted to throw that out.
No, that's a good point. I've heard some really thoughtful discussions on, you know, how to actually engage with, and I guess the because people are really in a you know, it's almost like you're talking to a drug addict or something. I mean, you know, it's kind of a difficult conversation because one has to put oneself in the position of somehow knowing more than the other person, which is very, you know, it's a difficult thing to do. So you don't want to say that. You want to just try to establish, you know, try to go back to, I think they said if you're talking to a family member, you know, mention some, you know, really important thing that happened between you at an earlier time. So you kind of hark back to an actual relational thing. So, you know, that's a great point, Brian. We do have another caller. Okay, thank you for calling. And the number is 503-231-8187. We've got Camilo up next, and you can be the next caller after that, 503-231-8187. Go ahead, Camilo.
Good morning. I think the message from the last call, and as you pointed out, is not to despair, but to recognize the reality of how steep the challenge is that we have. I mean, there were 75 million votes for Trump, you know, very close to half the voting population. So the chore that we have to face is massive, and it's going to require a lot of organizing. And I think the announcement that you made about the rally today is a good illustration that carries forth what we need to do and what we need to achieve and why. I think what's helpful in understanding where we're at is to be familiar with the history. And I think what we see in the history from the founding to today is that we've gone through a number of different phases where conditions change, attitudes are a little different. We reflect on the history in light of new information and new attitudes. But the underlying theme is consistent, and that is of white supremacy. So in looking at what is going on today, I think it would really be instructive to go back and look at the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s. I've just read a book called Battling the Plantation Mentality, Memphis and the Freedom Struggle. Memphis is their history of the freedom struggle is really instructive in terms of this theme of the plantation mentality that was gradually overcome through changes that were brought about by the Second World War, of course, industrialization, and the gradual increase in the massive mobilization of people to resist. And, you know, what is really an interesting conclusion of the book is that the garbage men strike would not have been won if it were not for the death of Martin Luther King. So that is a sign of you know, how steep the challenge is and how strongly we need to undertake the task of mobilizing and recruiting as many as we can to be a part of this struggle. So, I mean, essentially, we've got to be serious and to be intelligent and keep on pushing, as was indicated in the Democracy Now! Program and the article that you quoted by the person who was the guest there.
Yeah, Waleed Shaheed. Yeah, I think that's a you know, I'll just read those, just the headlines of the different points he made. The fight for the soul of Biden's administration and personnel, the fight for the soul of Biden's policy agenda, the fight for the soul of the congressional Democrats, the fight for the soul of our multiracial democracy, and the fight over public sentiment. And I think it's a, you know, the whole issue of, you know, I think, what do you think of, it's a continuing conversation. I know you've participated on the air, I'm sure, in your you know, your own life and, you know, issues that you've been involved in. But, you know, the idea of, like, continuing to, obviously the Democratic Party is now the, you know, the party in power, so it has to be contended with. You know, it seems like the, you know, the whole issue of you know, third party politics has sort of been put on the back burner. but it does seem like it really is an interesting moment to really to push that forward, the idea of, you know, actually fighting for a social justice agenda within the Democratic Party, both because, you know, you have a lot more people, I think 40%, I think that was on Democracy Now, of the Democratic elected people to Congress are now in the Progressive Caucus or whatever.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Well, I was impressed by what he said about how the transformative presidents, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Johnson, were not really in those kinds of transformations in mind, but it was their recognition of the times and what was happening politically that they took the great leadership and made the significant changes that they did. And I'm glad to hear that they can think of Biden in this same way, that, you know, maybe he can do it. I'm willing to, you know, to support that.
Well, that's why I brought up initially the idea of dual power, which, of course, originally came from Lenin in the Russian Revolution, was an idea that, you know, you had the existing structures of the czarist, you know, bureaucracy, the czarist military, the czarist secret police, etc. And at the same time, you know, you had this growing movement from more or less the grassroots to oppose that. And so how do you deal with that difficulty? Of course, you know, at this time, ironically, the most insurrectionary thing that's happened was from the other side, which is I see it more as possibly a sidelight. Again, you know, we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, it's not a sidelight in as Brian was saying, and we've seen that the massive number of people who've been, you know, increasingly gone down the rabbit hole of, you know, whatever pseudo anti-government white supremacist, you know, whatever that worldview involves, and to the extent that they actually thought they could, you know, take over the Capitol, and they came quite close to doing some really serious damage. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, we do need to, you know, he in his subhead he does mention, you know, insurgent tactics and demands. So, you know, the left has sort of been seen as the source of more insurgent politics. Anyway, I'm sort of losing myself, but I'll let you have the last word on that.
Well, to reflect on what you just said, looking back again at the civil rights era, the way that they looked at the protests were as a concern over violence, but that really overlooks the struggle for freedom, and that's what we need to keep our minds on. We got to keep struggling for freedom and keep that at the forefront. I got to run. I got an appointment, so...
Okay, well, thanks again. Thanks as always, Camilo. Always good to hear you. 503-231-8187. We're halfway through the hour, so get your, if you want to talk to me and talk to the KBOO listening audience, this is your chance to have a platform to do that. Or just talk to me. Ignore that you're talking to, you know, however many hundreds or thousands, hopefully tens of thousands of people listening to KBOO Community Radio, our small but powerful platform for the community to have a voice. 503-231-8187. Looks like we don't have anybody on stack. Yeah, the whole idea of dealing with, you know, having a common historical context obviously is, you know, that's what this, so much of this divide is all about. You know, there is a, you know, Howard Zinn's book, People's History of the United States, became this sort of bellwether, this both source of, you know, people rallying around an alternative narrative from the dominant one of U.S. history, and also a source of great attack from the right wing, and to the extent that I can't remember the name of the right wing version of that book, but there's this sort of war over history, which is obviously, you know, exemplified in this ridiculous 1776 commission report that I guess said that somehow slavery was not such a bad thing, and it was basically inevitably going away anyway or whatever, and sort of it was a reaction to the 1619 project, which harks back to the first year of slavery in what eventually became the United States, and set the stage for the prison industrial complex, school to prison pipeline, as the other speaker on Democracy Now, Dyson, was talking about earlier. So in that line, there's a couple things that I came across. One is interesting. Where is that here? Portland to lobby feds on reparations for black and indigenous communities. That's from just a week ago. This came out in the Oregonian Oregon Live. The city of Portland plans to lobby the federal government this year to provide reparations for black and indigenous communities. Financial payments or other aid to the descendants of enslaved black Americans and Native Americans harmed by the U.S. government was the top racial justice measure listed in Portland's annual federal policy agenda, which the city council approved last week. The federal government has to be a partner in any type of reparations conversation, said Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. And this continues for several more paragraphs. That's one thing. And another from just recently, from Indian Country Today newspaper, article by Colby Kicking Woman, by also last week. 2 years, this is a California Truth Healing Council begins historic work. 2 years ago, California Governor Gavin Newsom issued a formal apology to tribes in the state for atrocities committed against them and for the history of genocide and oppression they endured. He also decided to put action and money behind his words. Through an executive order, the governor established the California Truth and Healing Council to provide an avenue for Native Americans, quote, to clarify the record and provide their historical perspective on the troubled relationship between tribes and the state. That's, to say the least, the genocide of California Indians due to the massive gold rush and massive Euro-American immigration there is just one of the most terrible chapters. And the lack of ratifying dozens of treaties, just like in Oregon. This first-of-its-kind panel recently held its initial meeting to discuss what it hopes to accomplish. Quote, telling the truth is only one small part of this whole healing cycle, said Kaleen Sisk, a council member and chief of the Winnemem-Wintu tribe. It's taking action and doing things so tribal ways can continue to exist. The council is made up of 12 leaders of federally and state-recognized tribes from four California regions, southern, northern, eastern, and central. They will meet quarterly and present a yearly report to the governor's tribal advisor, Christina Snyder, Dry Creek Rancheria Band of Pomo Indians. And that article continues as well. That's really interesting. I'd like to see something like that happen in Oregon. I'm not sure if Governor Brown has issued such an apology herself, or she certainly hasn't initiated any kind of a panel like that. So that would be interesting if people want to talk about that and convey their concerns to Governor Brown. Looks like we got a couple people on deck, both males, it looked like. I encourage female and female-identified people to call in the show. But let's go to Ron. You're right off the bat. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just to all of these issues about people saying, well, you got all these 75 million people who voted for Trump and, you know, they're lost. Well, of course, I think they do have to go through a re-education process. Part of that has a lot to do with the fact that they got to a re-education process through propaganda that got them to where they're thinking. if you, I'm dating myself now. If I look back at the Rush Limbaugh, I mean, the Morton Downies, I mean, I came up with him during the Reagan era. There was a kind of, you know, a kind of arrogance, you know, that I think that shot through white America. There was a lot of challenges to existing civil rights laws. And then, not to mention, they kept the negative propaganda for years. So, you know, a lot of these people have been, you know, pretty much, they've been, through this propaganda, they've been educated in some way negatively. Now, the reason I say this, because if these guys go through another repropagation propaganda campaign, almost like a Fox News of 24/7, you know, and they would be telling the truth. They wouldn't be coming up with conspiracies like they did. A lot of things, you know, the white fear, all of that has a lot to do with the generated propaganda over the years that the so-called Democrats had never tried to combat, for lack of a better word.
No, well, that's interesting. You know, one of the things that comes to mind was obviously, you know, this is a kind of a thought-out strategy. I've talked on this show about the whole post-60s sort of retrenchment that, you know, obviously Reagan was such a key figure, but a lot of the think tanks, you know, the Heritage Institute and a bunch of the others were, you know, funded by these some of the right-wing billionaires, who was, really a coordinated strategy, who also funded some of these the whole talk radio shift is really a relatively recent phenomenon. Rush Limbaugh, you rightly point out, was one of the sort of the flagships of that. And then, you know, the Democrats, I listen sometimes to Tom Hartman, who was, you know, who's on X-Ray FM, our other community station in town, and he was on Air America. I don't know if you remember Air America, which was a brief
attempt
to have a national progressive talk station. But he complains, Hartman complains, that the Democrats, you know, and their funders never really took it seriously and never really put the money in the funding, you know, and even just having something like that to combat the massive amount of, you know, I listen to talk radio, and they, you know, there's like four or five stations in the Portland market that spew this kind of stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, because if you really look at the massive decisions that have been made ahead of propaganda, you know, and it's been successful in a dark way. If you look at the, you know, like, of course, Woodrow Wilson and all of these efforts that nations have done now with the advent of technology and how it works with fascism now, and then you can reach people all over the world. You don't have to say anything now. You could just, you know, use pictures and video, you know, for people so they can see all of these things. And you can see the massive technological efforts that have went through. So if people are looking at what's going on here in this terrorism, they really are missing it again, because this has became a worldwide network in terms of Steve Bannon's initiatives around the world to whip up fascism. A lot of it, you know, just goes hand in hand with these. I'm trying to remember these hedge fund stuff. They started buying off arable land, you know, arable pieces of land in places like Africa and things like that. So, you know, that was, you know, another established footprint into the world. You know,
Ron, hold on. I got to tell you, you think a lot. You think and talk a lot like me. I can get where you're saying, because you're saying a lot of different things all at once.
I feel like I just have a heartbeat here, so I just want to try to topple these, you know, as much as we can while I have the time, you know.
No, I hear you, and I tend to get into the same thing. But Steve Bannon, I'm glad you pointed that out, because he did just get pardoned by Trump, and you're right. I mean, he did, once he left the Trump administration, he, you know, we haven't talked about that enough on KBOO and on this show, but yeah, I mean, he played a really key role in meeting with these, you know, fascist figures all around Europe, and really furthering that whole movement towards right-wing populism that's really, you know, is such a major force in the world today. It's true.
Yes. Man, is there any way, like, we could get a hold of you or something like that. I mean, this sounds like a pretty fruitful type of discussion. See, I've never been able to really get out and talk about this. And I'm 61. I've been around. Obviously, I've been engaged enough to see, you know, how these cultural trends seem to have affected, you know, people, you know, and partly for my safety, too. I've saw this, you know, encroaching movement upon with these paramilitary camps. I saw this domestic terrorism, you know, being in the happening, you know, for decades, and they seem like they just turn their back. I think it's because the intersection of a lot of these groups was racist, you know, and I think a lot of them were concerned about stuff. It's the same type of sentiment. So when you talk about soft targets that they're going to, the soft targets are going to be us, basically.
No, I'm hearing what you're saying. I've been really, you know, that would have been where I would have gone with the thought of what the fallout from that insurrection is going to be. I think it's going to be a very dangerous time, because obviously, you know, the idea of attacking the center of power didn't work that time, and yes. And obviously they saw the writing on the wall, so you know they're going to. And they're not going away, and there's a lot of frustration. That energy's got to go somewhere. So yeah, I think a lot of people are seeing the possibility, and obviously here in the Northwest with the Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys, and you know,
Protestants and Catholic little skirmishes around town, you know, just to get their point out. You know, if you really look at, you know, then you look at the art of war, you look at. All of these things, these deflective things. So, you know, you see that this president hasn't been totally dejected from it. You know, if you really look at all of those and you take that into consideration instead of just, you know, looking, you know, and taking the reality in the situation into the situation, then you'll see that these are strategies that, you know, war strategies that have often been used. You know, they've been embodied into text and stuff. So these people, you know, they didn't just go in and cycle into these camp encampments just for a good feeling at the time. These guys went for a total embodiment of a transition of a cultural movement, you know, which is, you know, in part due to the racist heritage of this country. But now, you know, you got people that say that it's only one or two people. Well, it only takes one or two people with today's technology to mow down the whole community or country. Down.
Well, look, there's you know, hundreds and thousands and tens and thousands of people who are, you know, bought and sold on the most vicious QAnon type, you know. But anyway, we got another caller and possibly more, and about 10-15 minutes left. To answer your question, if you want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with any talk show host or any programmer at KBOO, including me. You just go to kboo.fm and go to Wednesday Talk Radio and just follow the prompts, and you can eventually click on my name that's like highlighted in green, which means there's a link to it, and you can email me through that if that's what you're interested in doing. I'd love to carry on the conversation. I have a number of people who, you know, I email with occasionally. And there's also KBOO Wednesday Talk Radio Facebook page. If you do that, but last words before I go to Chris. Well, we lost Ron. Okay, sorry, Ron. I didn't mean to just cut you off preemptorily, but 503-231-8187. That's the number to call in on. Looks like if Chris is still with us, you're on the air now.
Oh, thanks. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call, Paul, and that was a very good caller. Thank you for that caller, whoever he was, because the propaganda system is very important. You know, we have mountains of right-wing talk radio all across the country for 30 years now, and frankly, that's why I think this show and KBOO's talk morning shows are really important, because you said Tom Hartman, but I don't know if anyone else is on given the opposite view in Portland, which is ridiculous since we're a massively liberal city.
We used to have our own Joe Uris, who used to do Tuesday talk radio. He used to be on whatever that you know, the station that aired, it was the Air America station. He had actually a local talk show on that station. But that was, these things are short-lived because, you know, I don't know, there just isn't the, if we're going to have like billionaires or millionaires or whatever on our, supposedly on our side, you know, this whole idea of George Soros funding the left wing is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, if there are people who supposedly have a progressive viewpoint, then, you know, they need to be funding kind of the infrastructure, including the media infrastructure that can combat. I mean, you and Ron are entirely right. And I think a lot of people just don't pay that much attention to it on the quote left or progressives or people in favor of, you know, positive social change and social justice. And, you know, I've heard some of the most atrocious stuff. I've heard people celebrating the assault insurrection on the Capitol and basically calling for more. Here, what was the call letters? KBMP, I think. The Main Street, the station that, of the Main Street Network. A guy, Nathan Show, something Nathan, I have it here written somewhere. But, I mean, you know, people should be really calling those stations and, you know, putting pressure on that. That's one place we could go. I guess I should have had more direct information. Anyway, I'll stop talking. Go ahead.
Well, you're right, exactly right. And I was just going to mention some of the things as far as funding goes. You know, how does Rush Limbaugh get on 3,000 stations? Well, these are owned by right-wing, sometimes, you know, usually fanatic Christians, fundamentalist Christian ownership. And it's, you know, they dominate. And I'm wondering, how did that happen? How did, like, say, why can't Soros buy 3,000 stations and put some liberals on there? I mean, just to balance it out. They don't have to be radicals like us, but, you know, come on. Because you can't lose these rural states. Like, if they did that, they could shave 10% off these vote totals in these rural states, and we could have some senators in there and run, you know, we could... We wouldn't be losing the Senate all the time, you know what I mean? You can't give up.
Yeah, because AM radio goes to rural America. I mean, it's a fact.
Yeah. It's older people who don't maybe can't afford cable. You know, cable, that's for wealthy, educated people, but you can't surrender the bottom and just let them be totally propagandized by right-wing radio. And
well, I don't know the bottom. I don't want to be elitist. I mean, you know, these are people who are... Well, whatever. We don't have to get into the demographics of it all. But yeah, no, I think this is a really crucial part. And you know, obviously, the social media piece is huge, vast. You know, perhaps even more vast. But I think we have
one
to find
thing real
ways
quick.
Of,
I need to let you go on to someone else. So
okay.
But I wanted to mention one thing. I know you give a good platform to Native American issues. And I just read that one of the 17. Presidential orders, according to Bloomberg, is Biden is going to revoke Trump's Keystone XL pipeline permit. So that's some good
news.
That's
what I heard.
I just thought I'd bring that up.
Yep. That would be a big piece. You know, I think this is an important time for really, as we've said, to really not step back and just let, you know, the so-called progressives in Congress and in the presidency or whatever, well, Biden's not really progressive, do their thing, but to really force the issue. Anyway, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, and, thanks, and I like your callers, and I'll hang up and let you talk to someone else. Thank you.
Okay, well, we've got Harry on stack. I was going to read a little bit more from this dual power thing, but and there's also something I wanted to get to from the it's a headline, Police Accountability Tops 2021 Agenda for Oregon Legislature's Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Caucus. There's a we have our own, you know, just as in the Portland City Council has become much more, there's a greater presence of people of color than ever and of women. Also in the Oregon Legislature, there's been a little bit of an insurgence of people of color, and they have their own caucus, and they've got their own agenda, so you can look into that. But it looks like we've got Harry, as I said. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, greetings, greetings, and thank you for taking my call. When you were talking earlier about the talk radio here in Portland, what happened was little by little they got rid of the rules of ownership of media. And I think that's what caused them, conservatives, to buy up all the radio stations, especially here in Oregon. KBOO's the only level talking radio station. Example, you were talking about Tom Harden and Rush Limbaugh used to square off on KXL, 101. And what happened 10 years ago after Obama won, the owners of the station said conservative only, because they used to do both. In fact, they had Lars Larson and someone else here in Portland. They would square off on each other. So it was balanced, but it's not balanced anymore. But so thank you for KBOO. Next is what Trump did to the environment for the last 4 years. But even though all the federal stuff that happened, there was one good note in 2020, even though the pandemic and everything else, is they closed in October 15th, they closed the coal-burning plant in Condon, Oregon. And I thought this was a great thing, so there's no more coal burning here in Oregon. And it took them a long time to do it, but what happened was the EPA did a test, and they said that in that part of Central Oregon, they recommend you do not eat the fish because it had mercury in it, and the mercury came from the power plant. And so they finally got the chance to close it because of what it was doing to our environment. And they did something. They said, well, they did some type of coal that had less mercury, because they were complaining that in around that area there was like a haze. You know, so it's like, well, that's horrible. But I'm glad they finally. That's the only good news in the environment that happened, was when they closed that coal plant.
Of course, the problem is, and they open these gas burning plants, which burn fracked gas, which is still, there isn't enough of a awareness at the the levels of elite power that it's not it's considered a bridge fuel, but it's there's massive releases of methane that go on with fracking. There's massive destruction of the local environment around the fracking wells and such. So yeah,
we don't have fracking here in Oregon, do we?
No, but it's shipped here. I mean, that's what the whole issue of these, the methanol, proposed methanol plant at Kalama, and the proposed Jordan Cove LNG plant, is that they want to pipe frack gas from the Colorado Plateau region or the Wyoming, the inner Mountain West. That's been the goal, which we've succeeded largely in the Northwest of stopping that from happening, but it's still going on. So anyway, but yeah, I mean,
that was kind of strange, because I thought, wait a minute, I looked at the from the Colorado where they wanted to ship that, it was easier for them to go to San Francisco than to go to Oregon. I mean, miles wide of digging a pipe. Why don't they go to California? They're the ones that.
Well, that's not a solution. We don't want them to export it anywhere through anywhere.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And also, you mentioned about gas. They were mentioning they were opening a new gas-fired plant in Hermiston, Oregon. Hermiston, Oregon already has one, and they're going to build one right next to it. And it was kind of so. Where is this electricity going to? And who wants it out there?
It goes into the network. It goes to goes into the grid.
Yeah,
we all use it. Anyway, we only got a couple minutes left, Harry. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, and thank you. Bye.
Okay, 503-231-8187. Maybe we can get one more caller. I mentioned a few things. I mentioned the victory at the Kalama methanol refinery, which Washington Department of Ecology denied a key permit to it by saying that there would be vast amounts of greenhouse gases emitted, which is a, I don't know, I don't think it's the first, but if it's not the first, it's a very rare instance of concerns for global warming being taken into account to deny a state permit for one of these mega fossil. So that bodes well for the future. We are just about out of time. Lots more things we could talk about, again, there's the, I guess I closed that window here on my computer, but there's the Inaugurate Justice rally happening at Irving Park here in Portland. That's Northeast Fremont and between 7th and 10th. I'm not sure exactly what you can find it. That starts at 4 p.m. today. That's about all I got. Thank you all for calling. Brian, Camillo, Ron, Chris, Harry, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you everybody for supporting this important local voice for sanity and justice, KBOO Community Radio. Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act.